Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
Oh, you're right. you know that voice, you're a lucky person. If you don't, that was Jamie Lula singing Love Is My Religion. Welcome to Living in a Yes with the Reverend Deborah L. Johnson, our newest host here on Life Conversations Radio Network. She's going to come and give you an upgrade about how you feel about faith. So I'm going to get right to it, bring her on. The call-in number is 347-426-3346. Feel free to call in and engage. Feel free to call in and engage Reverend D. It's going to be a powerful time. Or I'm going to direct you to the Life Conversations Radio Fan Life page if you'd like to post a question. Or the Ask Life Coach A Day radio show. We are all family here, and it is my great honor to introduce, and, well, not really, because she's family. Let me bring on Reverend Deborah L. Johnson.
Celeste, it's so good to be here. How are you?
Hey, Reverend D., I'm so happy to have you here. I've been excited about talking about faith ever since I found out that you were going to do spiritual qualities for the month of June. You know,
I love
I mean,
it. So.
I'm ready for it. So I'm going to step away. I'll be right here if you need me. And I do have questions, so I'll be chiming in too, okay?
Okay, very good.
Have
well,
fun.
Welcome everybody. Absolute pleasure to be speaking this day about the concept of faith. One of the things that I've noticed as a spiritual teacher through the years is that we tend to objectify spiritual qualities. We think of things like love, faith, joy, peace, power, the discernment, creativity. We have a tendency to externalize them. We objectify them. We think of them as things outside of ourselves that we're searching after. We're looking for them. And the way that we feel as though we have obtained them is when we are able to acquire the symbols that they represent. You know, for example, if I can get in that relationship, then that lets me think that I have found love or I have now obtained love. I get that job and I suddenly think now I have the economic stability or the prosperity. You know, I do this thing and now I have that. When in actuality, it's the other way around. I love the way that my mentor, the Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith, puts it, what you're looking for, you're looking with. What you're looking for, you're looking with. That love is not something outside of ourselves that we are trying to obtain, but love is the essence of our being, which we are releasing into greater and greater forms of expression. So it's not that when I get that relationship, I will experience love. It's the other way around. The more loving I become, the greater the relationships and the depths of the relationships I get to have as an outgrowth of that. When we forget that and we think that it's the other way around, we always get off track. When we think it's the other way around, we have ourselves not only externally focused, but we have a tendency to not only objectify, but to commodify. So those spiritual qualities that I think I'm chasing after, I now start to think of them in material terms. And what is this thing I can buy to make me feel this thing? What is this thing that I can purchase? What object can I get? What is the outer tangible evidence of it? And to be honest with you, the marketplace is playing on that. The marketplace is playing on our insecurities. It's playing on this search. And if you really listen to commercials these days, The commercials very rarely actually talk about the product. The commercials are selling you spiritual qualities. You know, they're talking about, you know, peace and serenity and security or being cool and then hip and with it. And then it's only by association then, of you associating that product with that particular spiritual quality, which has now been commodified, that you then go purchase the product. Really important that we go back to the beginning. Really important to remember that the things that we are looking for, we are in fact looking with. Now, I want to say a little bit about the English language and how the English language is very tricky here. Because we use the exact same words to be both a noun and a verb. Okay? So we understand that there's, say, building. There is an object called a building. And there's also the process of building. We understand that there is a thing called love that we would use as a noun, but then there is also the act of loving. There is a thing to love. In actuality, those two go hand in hand. In order to get to the noun, you have to do the verb. In order to get to the noun, you have to be the verb. You can't get to the noun love without the action of love. You can't get the noun, the physical building, without the activity of building. With that in mind, there's a way in which this same principle applies to the spiritual qualities as well. That in order to have peace, we have to be peace. We tend to think of peace as just a noun. Peace is a verb. Just sink that in for a moment. Peace is a verb. There is the activity of peace, which creates the thing that we get to see in the external world as peace. This place that I'm coming from about this concept of faith. We tend to make faith a noun exclusively, that faith is some outer thing that we're trying to get or we're trying to obtain. Faith is a verb. Faith is an action. Faith is an activity. Faith is a state of beingness. And you'll never experience faith as a noun until you exercise faith as a verb. You have to do faith. You have to be faith. You have to exercise faith. You have to act as faith in order to experience faith as a noun. This is profound. I just breathe this in for a second. Breathe it in. And I'm going to pause and see if there are any questions that are out there already, or if any phone calls are coming in, because I don't want to lose anybody. I want to lose anybody here in the beginning.
You're good, Reverend D. Keep going. We're taking notes. And say hello to Electra in the chat room. They're all coming in. We're good.
Okay.
All right.
There is a letter in my series called Letters from the Infinite. They're these spiritual downloads. It's pure prophecy. And I have a collection of them out now in two volumes. The first volume is called The Sacred Yes. The second volume is called Your Deepest Intent. And both volumes are put out by the publisher Sounds True. There's a letter called Faith that appears on page 43 in The Sacred Yes, volume 1 of the Letters from the Infinite series. And I'm going to take a minute. I usually won't read an entire letter, but I'm going to read this entire letter because it gives so much of the foundation for where we're going to be going today and discovering how faith is not blind, how faith is not passive, how faith is something very active, and how faith is about us. If there is a message that is important for you, for all humankind, regarding what you commonly refer to as faith. Too many of you relegate faith to a belief in some far-off deity, a supernatural power or being that is overlooking you and is ready to intercede at any moment. In this understanding, however, there really isn't any faith in the wisdom of this super entity to intercede as it sees fit. You have expectations about the whens, the wheres, the hows, the ought-tos, and the shoulds. This results in a great deal of anger, frustration, resentment, and out-and-out confusion over what going on. This type of faith is not what I have in mind, nor is it what is referred to as faith in the scriptures. The faith that I speak of is not a blind hoping, wishing, wondering, guessing, second guessing, or worrying about what some far-off being is going to do or not going to do. No, no, no. The faith described in Scripture is a faith that resides deep in the soul of one's being and is sustained by an understanding of one's connectedness to the whole. In this state of connectedness, there is the awareness that there is no separation. And with the understanding that there is no separation, there is an understanding that the good you seek is in fact already at hand. The faith is an awareness that all movement takes place in one's own consciousness. Understand what I am saying here. When one understands faith from the scriptural perspective, it is clear that what is moving is not a distant supernatural being rushing in from outer space to save the day. There's no distance in this awareness, no gap that needs to be closed. Since you are forever connected to the all that is, the only charge for you is to get into alignment. Understand again what it is that I am saying here. Who is doing the moving? Who needs to be convinced? Who needs to be influenced? Too many of you think it's God, but I am the one who needs to be influenced. You're busy praying to me, trying to convince me to do this thing or that thing, as though I am unaware of the circumstances, as though I am unaware of your needs, as though I am not only unaware, but suspiciously indifferent. I, the Mother, Father, God, living essence of all things, am aware of all things. There is nothing you could reveal to me in your prayers that I, in fact, do not already know. The purpose of your prayers is not to convince me. The purpose of your prayers is to convince you. The purpose of your prayers is to convince you that I already know. It is yourself who you need to convince, not me. You need to convince yourself that all is indeed well. When you come to me in prayer, it is the indication that you are ready to move. Coming to me in prayer is the indication that you are now willing to give up the prism of lack and limitation through which you are viewing yourself and your circumstances, and that you are now ready to see with your spiritual mind's eye. Your prayer indicates that you are ready to relinquish your own perspective, your own perception, your own opinion, and your own willfulness in attempting to take matters into your own hands. The faith that is exercised when you pray is a faith that understands that there really is nothing else to be done but to accept that all things are already in divine order. The faith mentioned in Scripture is a faith that starts off with the assumption that all is well. Understand the difference when you start off with the so-called problem as the given and the potential for resolution as the variable. In your equations, the problem is the constant. The problem is the absolute, and the problem is the independent variable. Your starting assumption is the problem. Then you wonder what the solution is going to be, or if there's even going to be a solution. You make the spiritual response to the question another question. You question whether there will be a response. The inner workings of spirit are perceived as relative, as the dependent variable in your equation. Oh, this is not how I operate. This is fallacious thinking in the world. This is your egocentric thinking running amok again. You put yourself and your problems front and center in the middle of everything and have everything revolve around your problems, including me. I don't revolve around your problems. I do not revolve around your problems. You don't revolve around your problems either. You just don't know this. Being born in my essence, you are one with me. And we stand steadfast. We stand in the center. And with quiet eyes, we watch everything else moving around us. We are the given. The I am that I am is the given. The I am that I am is the starting point. is the only thing that is absolute. It is the only thing that is independent. It is the only thing that exists. The relative, the variable in the equation, is your so-called problem. Your problems are the only things that are changing. They're the only things that are coming and going that are iffy and maybe, kind of, sort of. There is nothing maybe, iffy, kind of, sort of about me. There is nothing maybe, iffy, kind of, sort of about divine order and divine right activity. Therefore, when you are exercising faith, you are going back to the beginning. You are going back to remembering that all is under my spiritual dominion. You are remembering that you are one with cause, not the effects. And in this reawakening, you are able to declare the power of your word. What do I mean when I say that you are able to declare the power of your word? You, all of you, are creative beings. I have infused your every thought with creative essence. You cannot think an uncreative thought. For every thought that you think, there is a reaction upon it, as you know. And the universe goes about the business of making manifest your every thought. This is kind of scary, isn't it? This is why I remind you so often to mind your mind. Imagine that, my children. Your every thought, your every thought, your every thought. Not just the ones you want to manifest, not just the ones you really want to see, your every is responded to. When you exercise faith, you are so aware of this. When you exercise faith, you are minding your mind. You are taking all of your creative energy and potential and directing it towards a purpose that not only is for good, but also is in alignment with divine order. When you are exercising your faith, you become aware that all of the worry, anxiety, fear, doubt, lack, and limited thinking is working against you. You become aware that those thoughts are acutely counterproductive, that they are not just neutral. They're not just static, but that your so-called negative thinking has power as well. In those moments of exercising your deep faith, you become acutely aware that you have choice. And in that moment of choice, you are choosing the Most High. You are choosing to work with what is. You are choosing to bless what is. You know that there is an energy in your blessing that elevates the energy at hand, allowing all things to move to a higher vibratory pattern. When you are exercising faith, you're not just waiting for something outside to intervene. You are standing tall and knowing that you have the power to make the difference. When you are exercising faith, you are standing firm on the truth that you know. You are looking a lie in the eye and declaring it to be the lie that it is. You're looking at the so-called facts and reminding them that they have no power over you. You are looking at all the appearances that may indicate to you something to the contrary, and you are saying to them, I will not allow you to sway me one iota from the truth that I know. There is nothing passive about faith. Too many of you think that to express faith is to sit back and do nothing. Oh no. Minding your mind while getting into alignment with the divine is probably one of the hardest things that you will ever do. It takes all of your energy. It takes all of your focus, all of your attention, all of your love, all of your courage, all of your strength. There is nothing passive about faith. There is nothing passive about faith. Think on these things. Continue to reflect upon them as you matriculate through your lives. There's so much to say about this subject. However, what I have said is sufficient for the moment. I am quite pleased that you are taking the time at this time to go deeper in your spiritual discernment and discipline. This is a very good thing. Keep it up, and you will continue to become more powerful in your ability to exercise the faith that is the reflection of the truth of your being.
Ooh, Reverend D.
Such Everybody just needs to take a breath.
Yes, I just did.
Take a breath.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and while we're taking that breath, we're going to take a quick break. And I have a question for you on the other side. Powerful word. And for those people who don't know how to get that amazing, I want to say book, but that book was really channeled, and that's going to really start a whole other conversation. So let's save that to let people know how that came through you. You had to have a lot of faith to allow those words to pour through you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. So we're going to do quick announcements and do a break, and then we'll continue this conversation on the other side. So get some water, Reverend D, because we've got some questions for you.
Okay.
All right. Hello, family. I hope you're enjoying Living in a Yes with Reverend Deborah L. Johnson, breaking down faith, as I knew she would. I have some quick announcements to share with you, because we have amazing consciousness-shifting shows on Life Conversations Radio Network, and I want to tell you where you can find out about more of the shows around here. The Ask Life Coach Today radio show airs on Mondays at 12 p.m. Eastern. And then you can catch Reverend Deborah L. Johnson on Tuesday nights for Living in the Yes at 9 p.m. Eastern. Be sure to join Ambassa Safera for the play experience every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And I'm on
at 8 p.m. Eastern every Sunday on The Celestial Show with Celeste Morgan. We also have Ancestral Blueprints with Lisa Iverson and Life Coach Today on the last Wednesday of the month. For more information about these shows, make sure you go to lifeconversationsmedia.com. And make sure you stay tuned, because when you do, you get to be the change you want to see.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Are you about work, 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 and no play? Adults have a tendency to stay busy and neglect their own health and well-being, while successful people take regular breaks, vacations, and timeouts to play, rest, rejuvenate, and tap into their creative selves. Play and Heal is a unique opportunity for you to host a life-changing event in your very own living room, an event that is especially designed by you to facilitate the releasing of stress, balancing the mind, body, and spirit, not only for yourself, but of your friends and family, too. Whether you create a soiree, a ladies' night, or couples event, these events are infused with the best of care, informative health information, and tools for stress maintenance that will shift how you see yourself and empower you to begin to work in cooperation with your best life. This event is sure to put a smile on your heart and send your spirit soaring. To book your Play and Heal event today, go to playandheal.org. Or you can email us at info@playandheal.org.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source, a spiritual guidebook for navigating life's journey. You're listening to Life Conversations Radio.
Welcome back. We're going to bring Reverend D back from her break. How are you doing over there, Reverend D?
Oh, I'm fine.
I know you are. You're on fire. Look, I have a question for you. It's something I always wanted to ask in Sunday school, but I never had the guts to do it. All right. Can you please explain to me what is the underneath, what's the story underneath the woman with the issue of the blood from Luke 8:43-48? I've always been touched by that story. And when you describe faith as being something, as an action, something that we have to do, my mind automatically went to her. And one of my favorite things that Jesus said, I mean, out of all of the things that Jesus is reported to have said, is, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Do you think she exercised what you were talking about earlier?
Oh, there's no question in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's some wonderful nuances to that story. In this particular story, Jesus is in a crowd. It says that there's a throng of crowds around him. And at some point in time, he turns around and asks the question, "Who touched me?" And his disciples are basically like, you know, you got to be kidding. You know, like, who touched you? There's so many people around here. And the King James Version has it describing Jesus as saying that somebody touched me, that virtue went out of me, that there was a very particular person that he was looking for. That word virtue, a more literal translation, would be power. That he felt somebody tap into his power. Okay. So he turns around and he's inquiring, and this woman confesses. But you got to remember how deep this is. This is a woman. And she says that she sits down and she tells him his story, tells her the story. This is a woman, says, who had an issue with blood for 12 years. that she had gone to all the doctors. She had exhausted all of her resources and everything, and nobody could do anything with her. The assumption with this issue with blood is that there was something like menstrual or something going on with her for 12 years. In Jesus' day, a woman was considered quite unclean if she was bleeding. So unclean that a husband wasn't even supposed to touch his wife during that particular time. That women were basically in this sort of state of shame while they were actively bleeding. So one, she's a woman, and two, she is in effect an untouchable. She should not be touching or being in contact with any male, and the same thing with him. Okay? So this woman has come there seeking him out and quoted as saying, she didn't even want his attention. She didn't want anything from him. She's like, if I could just touch the hem of this man's garment, that's all I would need. Now, another one of the things that was very popular in that day was for prayers to be sewn in the hems of the garments of priests and rabbis and holy people. Whether she had assumed that or not of Jesus, I don't know. But check this out. Okay?
Uh-huh.
He said power went out of him. I want you to really catch that. That before he could do something to her, she, in fact, had already done something to him. She tapped in. This is what happens in healing. It is as though we are energy packs. We're like batteries. Like you jump start your car from one battery to another battery with jumper cables. That's what we're doing to each other all the time. We are energizing each other with our prayers and our blessings, but we're also sapping and zapping. We're also draining energy off of each other. So he listens to her story. She's already healed. She's already healing. And he explains to her, it's not me. I don't even have to do anything for you. He says, your faith has made you whole. Whole. Now that word in scripture that's used for whole is the same word that quite often is translated as saved. You get a whole different vibration when you understand that every time it says, you know, something being saved, and have you been saved, and then they're saved, it gives this feeling as though there's something out there that's going to get you, like you have to be saved from. The word that's being used is whole. The only question that Jesus ever asked people when healing was going to take place. Just one question. He didn't ask them how they got that way. He didn't ask them about their faith, their religion. He didn't ask for money. He didn't ask what they did to make this happen, how long it had been there, had they gone through this. He asked any of those kind of questions. He would only ask one question: wilt thou be whole? This is not a passive will. This is a direct intent. Do you have the intent to be whole? You already are whole, but will you be it? Will you be it? And he was explaining to this woman, you already had it. You had it before you came here. That it was your faith. Nothing passive. That word faith in scripture that's used in the New Testament is a Greek word, pistis. Pistis. Which means knowledge of, assent to, and confidence in certain divine truths, especially those that lead to good works. Knowledge of and awareness. Assent. Assent is not just like a passive agreement. An assent is when you wholeheartedly are in alignment with it. And confidence in, a trust. There's a belief, an acceptance, and a trust. There's a trinity there. It's almost like a litmus test. And to the extent that any one of those things is weakened, to that extent is our faith weakened. I use that in my own life. When I am sensing that I'm not exercising the faith that I really need to be exercising, I really ask myself, which is lacking here? Is it really knowledge of? Most of the time for me, it's not. Most of the time, it's either my assent, I'm just not going along with it, or my trust, my confidence, I'm not stepping out on what it is that I know. And this woman did all of it. She knew. She gave her full assent, and she had confidence in it. She knew what was going to happen before she got there. You feel that difference? She wasn't hoping. She wasn't wishing. She wasn't pleading. She wasn't waiting for him to do anything. I'm getting mine. And if I can add one more thing on here, one of the things that I always find interesting in Jesus and his stories and his parables and the examples is that it's always the most unlikely character. It's the odd one out. It's always the one that shouldn't be the powerful one, that shouldn't be the one that's looked up to or exclaimed. You know, in fact, the one he said had more faith than anybody he'd ever met in Israel was a Roman soldier, was the enemy. And a very similar kind of story. In that particular story, it's called the story of the centurion. Century, 100. The centurion is a Roman officer who's over 100 men. And as the story goes, this centurion has a Hebrew young lad who's, depending on which book of the Bible you're reading it in, sometimes it says his son or his slave or his servant. But clearly, somebody who's Hebrew, a young lad who's in his servitude in some kind of way. And it says that the Jewish elders go out and find Jesus and says, come, and heal this man's servant. He's a good guy. This guy has built us temples, and he has done wonderful things for us. Yes, he's a Roman, but basically he's a good guy. So Jesus goes, and the centurion meets him outside of the house and tells him, I'm not worthy that you even come into my house. You don't even have to come into my house. He said, just speak the word. That's all you have to do. And the centurion tells Jesus, you, like I, am a man under authority. I say to this one, go, and he goes. I say to this one, come, and he comes. Just speak your word. And Jesus is reported as saying to everybody in all of Israel, I have not seen a faith such as this. That's deep. The man understood something, He said, you, like I, am a man under delegated authority. He got his authority from Caesar. He knew Jesus was working under a higher power. He was like the woman with the issue of blood. He's like, hey, I know who you are. All I got to even do is just be in proximity because something's going on up in here. I see it. I know it. And I am in full anticipation of being a party to it. No unworthiness. No begging, pleading, wishing, second guessing. You know, am I worthy of this? And is it going to happen? Mm-mm. No. They knew. Faith is knowing. Faith is not blind. It's not blind. I love that story, too, about the woman with touching the hem of his garment. Your faith has made you whole. Your understanding. Ending. Mm-hmm.
That is powerful. That is so powerful. And now I'm wondering, so what kind of faith did you need to have to receive the download for the books that have come through you?
I struggled a lot. I grew up fundamentalist, evangelical, charismatic Pentecostal. And these were some praying folks, some deep folks, some, you know, miracle folk. These were not Sunday morning church folk. These were religion, not just spirituality for them, but religion was 24/7. It was like how you live. But there was a message that I was getting as a gay person, I've always been gay, that my very existence was a mistake, that there was no room for me in the universe, that gay people were satanic. You know, an abomination in the eyes of God. That's a lot to lay on a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and back then, you know, I'm 58 now, and back then, the laws were pretty rigid as well. So by law, I'm a criminal, and I'm satanic, religiously speaking, and the American Psychiatric Association hadn't quite come around yet either, so I'm also sick and psychopathic and depraved. Well, that's what all that external stuff said, but that isn't what I believed. That's not what I felt. So I was in a, you know, talk to me, God. I have to hear from you. I can't believe this stuff. I can't believe that you don't love me as much as you love everybody else. You know, I can't believe that I'm destined to a life of loneliness. You know, I can't believe that you frown upon, you know, my love. I can't believe this. So I went on a search. I was on a deep, deep search to hear, to really hear, to know, to feel. So the faith that I had and that I had to exercise was that God was really a God of love. That God was not small and punitive and fickle and arbitrary and culturally laden and all the rest of that, that as a black person, that as a female, that as a gay person, that I was not less than in the eyesight of the God that made everything. And that's where it's from that place, really, that the deep longing came, because I loved God. I've always loved God. I've always, always, always been in a love affair with God. Even when I didn't understand God or was angry with God, I still loved God. And it is out of that sense of the love affair that I began to hear. Of course, after being beaten with many stripes along the way for hard-headedness and not paying attention and, you know, la, 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 I was at a really low place when I first actually started to hear the letters for myself. And that's actually documented in the introduction of the first volume, The Sacred Yes, that whole process of how all that started. Yeah. But, you know, for me, I love language, so it comes to me linguistically. For somebody else, they may get it through music or art or through gardening or, you know, whatever, what dance, kinesthetically. Everybody will get it, so to speak, however they get things. And, you know, that just, language just happens to be my medium of expression. So, you know, spirit connects to me there.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
What a phenomenal journey you've been on. And I know June, you know, not to sideswipe this conversation, June is considered to be Freedom Month for LGBT community.
True.
And when you, even just you mentioning it, just a little bit of the pain that you had to go through before APA caught on and everything else, there are so many places in your life besides just downloading these powerful words that you had to exercise faith even within your culture, even within mm-hmm. society. So could you have imagined where we are now, back when they were telling you you were sick?
You know, the way I can answer it is sort of yes and no. The yes part is that the world, my reality, didn't match the circumstances. I guess the best way I could explain it is I tell people all the time that a slave who believed they were a slave would have never gotten on the freedom train. It's only the enslaved person who in their mind thought, what is a free person like me doing in this unjust bondage? Even if slavery was all that they ever knew, as a lifetime experience, but in their bones, they knew what freedom was. Mm-hmm. And identified with freedom more than the slavery. Well, that's what it was like for me. Where, yeah, I know I'm in this world, but I saw something else. As a matter of fact, in a couple of weeks, or I guess technically it's a couple of months, in August, I'll celebrate the 30-year anniversary of a lawsuit that I won, along with a former partner, where in that lawsuit we set the precedents for the inclusion of sexual orientation in California's civil rights bill. And it got certified for publication. We won on appeal, unanimous opinion. And it really set the stage for so much of what's going around in the country now. Unbeknownst to us, we were actually the national test case for the right to be out. It was a restaurant that refused to serve the two of us in a certain section in the restaurant. And the irony of it was that we were there to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday. The year before it was a holiday. And they did the exact same back of the bus thing. You know, you can eat over here, you can eat over there, whatnot, but you two can't eat over here, not in this part of the restaurant. And, wow, it really got to be quite a big deal with the media and the news and whatnot. It was even in Jet Magazine in the issue that where Marvin Gaye's father killed him, okay. Marvin Gaye Sr. killed Marvin Gaye Jr., that was the cover. So it's in Ms. Magazine. It really, really got out there. But it came to a point where in life you have to kind of call the question is what I say. That did I believe that this would happen? Did I believe that I would actually be able to marry my partner and, you know, while a black man was in office, did I actually believe that? No, I didn't think it would happen in my lifetime. Did I think it could happen and would happen? But the fact that I have had a chance to actually eat some of the fruit of, you know, the years and years worth of labor, no, I wouldn't have believed it. But what I know is we're all one. We're all one. And sometimes I mourn that we even called it a civil rights movement because it was really a spiritual rights movement. The civil rights wasn't really the final goal. The civil rights was more the prize. The goal was the spiritual rights. What we were doing is saying we are all equal under the eyes of God. That is a spiritual proposition.
And if we are all equal under the eyes of God, segregation cannot be justified. Sexism cannot be justified. You know, all these things cannot be justified if, in fact, we are all equal under the eyes of God. And what I find so often with us, when it comes to exercising faith, that somewhere we do not understand our divine inheritance. That somewhere we're not standing, really standing in our spiritual authority and our spiritual power. You know, we're being a little mealy-mouthed because of our circumstances, our conditions, because of our actions, what we have done, what we haven't done, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then it's like little old me that's been looking out there and waiting for some big entity, some big deity or something to come and, like, you know, rescue the day. But I'm telling you what I know. When you watch somebody really get into faith, and I don't care if it's just the little person in the who can barely walk, who's lighting the candle in the cathedral. All of a sudden, I'm getting pictures of my aunt. They're like twins, my mother and the sister, and my cousin, her eldest, who actually lived with my family for some time all through high school and college. He's my age. And he became ill, his peculiar heart condition. Heart stuff runs very deep in my family. And I can remember my aunt now. She's like, mm-mm, not my baby. Mm-mm. He was about 50 at the time. Mm-mm, not my, no. Not my baby. She's like, God, everybody, I don't know what y'all got to do about it, but my baby, it's going to be fine. After his surgery, he had it at Stanford. There are only 3 doctors in the whole country who could deal with anything this rare. They came to him and they said, he's a lawyer. They came to him and they said, we've got some good news and bad news for you. They said, the bad news is that the operation failed. It did absolutely nothing that we thought it would do. The good news, you have the heart of a 30-year-old. They said there is no explanation for this other than this is a miracle. And for about 2 years, he went on tour. They sent him on the circuit. Medical, like the medical circuit, the top medical schools, just to study him. And what happened? And I don't know what that is. You know, I don't know what that is within us. And too often we have to be pushed clear up against the wall before something within us just makes a bold declaration. Whatever. I'm free. You know, I'm getting out of here. I want a second chance. I'm willing to forgive. I want to be whole, where there's no more excuses, there's no more stories, there's no more rationales and reasons, and where the facts stop making any difference to you whatsoever, where there's a heart desire that is just so deep and so profound. and you're just standing in it. We all have that capacity. Here's the kicker of it all, though. People think that they either have faith or they don't. But we all have faith. It's just a question of in what? Everybody has faith. Just what do you have faith in? You know, do you have faith in Murphy's Law? That if it can go wrong, it will? You know, do you have faith in the government, faith in the economy, faith, you know, what do you have faith in? I remember this conversation I had years ago. It was with this active intravenous drug user. And he was trying to tell me about how there wasn't a God. And on and on and on. And I finally looked at him and I said, you know what? For all your talk, you believe in God a whole lot more than I do. And he just rebuffed like, what? Hey, what? Yeah, what are you talking about? I said, you really believe that you can shoot up tonight, pass out for a few days, wake up, somehow get restored enough to shoot up again and keep doing this over and over and over again? I said, baby, that's some faith. I said, I don't have that much faith. I don't know who you, what you believe in that's going to keep healing you and restoring you. I said, because I'd be afraid I'm going to die. So for whatever it is you don't believe in, oh, trust me. You are banking on something coming and healing your behind.
Reverend D, you are too much. You know, time is doing what time does, and I definitely want to make sure these people know about the phenomenal things, our listeners know the phenomenal things you're doing. So I believe tomorrow we get to circulate with you.
Actually, it's on Thursdays.
Thursday. I'm throwing the days off. See, help me.
Yes, it's on Thursday. It's 3 o'clock Eastern, noon on Pacific. And it's a virtual group. It's a virtual program. It's called We Circulate. And it is an adventure in abundance where we are really exercising our faith. We really are. By simply noticing, by being aware, it's a practice, and these are drop-in times for us to talk and to share and to go a little bit deeper. We call it See, Thank, and Share, where we're just noticing all of the good that's all around us, expressing gratitude for it, because there's something about gratitude that just makes everything multiply. And then paying a bit forward. Most of the people in the program are tithing 10% of their unexpected income to Inner Light Ministries. Other people may be tithing it to someplace else. And, you know, that's sort of neither here nor there where it finally goes. However, the practice of it is life-altering. When we change the conversation from lack and limitation. It's not just about money, but money is something that we can, in fact, you know, codify and qualify, and we can see it there in a very visceral way. But people are just taking a look at all the blessings that come their way. Maybe somebody takes you out to dinner. Maybe you're gifted something. Maybe you get a refund. Maybe there's a discount. You know, all these different ways that blessings start coming to us. And when we notice it, and we do it on the unexpected in particular, because a lot of times people will be, oh, I barely got enough to pay the bills. I don't have, well, okay, fine. Let's just do it on life's overflow. And when they begin to see the overflow, they get to get in the flow. And it really is a revolutionary practice. And I invite anybody to join us with that. And I think you're going to post it as well. But for anybody who's listening, the URL is www.innerlightministries.com. That is our church name. And then just do / We Circulate - welcome. That's www.innerlightministries.com/WeCirculate. And then a - welcome. And that will get you to the We Circulate page if you want to sign up and participate in the program. If you want to be on the virtual call that I was just mentioning, that is meet.fm/innerlight. That's the platform that we're using for those virtual shows. meet.fm/innerlight. And that will take you straight to the show. And you can call in or you can ask questions or chat. They are archived. Any materials and whatnot that we use are available afterwards, you know, as well. And anybody who is so interested, I would love for you to be able to participate with that. For any information about the book, the sales of the book, if you'd like an autographed copy or a special discount that we have available, you can contact me at deborahjohnson.org. That's the long way. Deborah Johnson, johnson.org. contact@deborahjohnson.org, and we'd be more than happy to give you any information about upcoming events or things, and we'd love hearing from you. Definitely.
Wonderful. Can you believe this? We have one more question and like 5 more minutes before we have to release the show until next week. But it's a non-faith related question, but the listener is very, very curious about this. Who are the people of Nod? In the beginning, there was only Eve and Adam. So where did the people of Nod come from?
Well, Adam and Eve are they're allegorical characters. You know, we say Adam, but it's really Adam, from the Adama, from the earth. You know, Adam is really Adam, earth being. There's a and there's two creation stories that are there back to back, and they're each presented for a different reason. The first creation story is more like the story of evolution. You know, this was created this day and this was created that day. And it really does follow what we call the evolution pattern, with humanity being the last ones to come on the scene. And the second story is a story that speaks more to sort of the condition of things and how things got to be. And you see it, like, immediately when you get out of those stories that are being told for a specific point, we have a populated earth. that there were people who were there, and they're in the land. I remember I used to ask my mother, I says, well, if there was only Adam and Eve, and Eve only had 2 sons, like, you know, where did we all come from? And I know that there is a feeling about a very literalness in terms of there just being like one man and one woman. But genetically speaking, we can't populate the whole earth in that vein. And they were already there. They were in the land. Mm-hmm. They were in the land. They were already there.
What a conversation. So I hope, Electra, I hope you got your answer. They were already there. So it's a question of whether we're dealing with it literally or if we can see it as an allegory. But
well, there are people all over the planet. Mm-hmm. There were people all over the planet. And you know, I know that starts to step on toes, but if you look at cultures, every culture has a creation story, and every culture has the first human being coming from their tribe. You know, it's referred to as a motif, and people were in the area. They were there, and you ask yourself, who wrote Genesis?
Oh.
I mean, really? I mean, like, who wrote it?
Right.
So who was there to witness that, to write it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to love this month of June with you and the spiritual qualities. Next week, you're going to bring us peace, Reverend Dr. Deborah Johnson. So you don't trip on titles. And I want to hear next week, Wilhelmina's got to come and hang out.
I know
she has something to say about peace.
Yes. Yes, she does.
Wait.
And I do receive an honorary doctorate on June 14th out of my home church, the Agape International Center in Los Angeles.
Oh, wonderful.
An honorary doctor of divinity.
Indeed, indeed. And your life tells the story.
Thank you very
beautiful
much.
Beautiful people. And you know, it's my pleasure. Beautiful people, you can find Reverend Deborah L. Johnson at deborahjohnson.org. And she'll be back here next Tuesday. Make sure I have my days right. So excited, carrying on this amazing conversation about spiritual qualities. I'm going to go with peace and look forward to checking her out on her website and all the events that she has going on. I'll be there with you on Thursday for the Adventure in Abundance. You know that. I'll post it too. And
all
I
right.
didn't say it at the top of the hour. Thank you, Reverend D. We love you so much. Thank
love you.
You
too.
All right now. And I didn't
Take
say
care.
It at the top of the hour. You too. But you can find Jamie Lula for Love is My Religion at jamielula.com. JAMILULA. Hope you enjoyed this Life Conversations Network one of the brightest shows here. But we're excited. Come back next week. We'll continue the conversation. Peace.
Talk to me. Hear my plea. Send me free. By all that I see, by all of the tears flooding through me, I want to know your joy, know your peace, fill me with your grace so that I can face my fear,
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.